Welcome to the Mastering the Game of Life podcast. In this podcast, there'll be insights around three key areas to mastering the game of life: purpose, prosperity, philanthropy. Your host, Paul Lowe, the third sector mentor, is the founder of Hearts Global CIC, which, along with many other of his charitable commitments, has been responsible for positively impacting thousands of people's lives, particularly young people from disadvantaged communities. Author of Mastering the Game of Life, From Pain to Purpose, and Speaking from Our Hearts books. Introducing your host, Paul Lowe.
A very warm welcome to you, the listeners. And as we focus this episode around the title, Never Give Up, I'd like to extend that welcome to Crystal Rawls, a life coaching counsellor from South Africa, and she's kindly agreed to share her story of dogged tenacity with us. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you, Paul.
So maybe we could start by asking the all-important question, why should we never give up?
Well, I think that not giving up is the only option that many of us have in life, because we've got to live this life. And if we do give in to our natural sort of tendencies to want to give up when things get too tough, if we do that, then life basically ends, or it becomes a very miserable life. So I've just found that to be determined to never give up right from the outset, and to remind oneself to never give up, is the best way of making sure that you can live every day to the fullest, because no matter what you're facing, you've already made that decision to not give up.
Okay, so if you can put that in a more practical stroke experiential focus from your own life, Crystal, what does that story look like?
Practically, yeah, that's every day. It's that determination to cling to your strength, your inner strength, whether that comes from faith, which in my case it does. It's just deciding to focus my mind on being grateful and seeing what things I can be grateful for. And even though there may be pain, emotional pain, physical pain, or circumstantial pain through others doing things to me that I feel are unfair or unjust, or if I just feel like life has thrown me a curved ball, I then try and put my mind into that focus of just what can I be grateful for today? What is this in this situation? What can I learn about myself? What can I change about my thinking patterns? What makes me happy today? What can I be happy about today? And those are just little starters and mindsets that I've found have helped me to take control of my day right from the outset. And I probably have to do that on an ongoing basis throughout the day, because there are many moments in the day where I then think, oh, I'm tired, I've got pain. So I've got to just constantly readjust my thinking. And I think with my faith, I send up prayers to God all the time, and that also keeps me in a constant state of awareness that I'm not forgotten, and that there is a bigger picture. I'm not isolated in this world on my own, and that gives me hope and strength and courage.
Okay, so in terms of putting that in some context, Crystal, can you give us insights into your life's journey thus far and some of those challenges that have led you to come on and inspire people, hopefully, and add value by saying never give up? I mean, you've obviously got, well, I know you've got, because we've spoken about it off air, an inspirational story that leads you to make those three simple words of never give up. Are you prepared to share that with us?
Sure, Paul. Thank you. I think when I got myself through wrong choices and wrong beliefs about myself, basically not valuing myself a lot. I got involved in an abusive relationship, and then obviously that went further into an abusive marriage with the same guy. And in this relationship, I think this is what toughened me up and also made me realize that if I am going to make it, if I am going to make every day count, and if I am going to survive every day, I've got to choose to never give up. I've got to find a way of making it through every day. And through this abusive relationship, and as people who have experienced any form of abuse, I'm sure that this can resonate, that every day you've got to try and pick yourself up and remind yourself that you aren't as bad as what you are feeling you are within yourself. Every day I had to look myself in the mirror and I had to tell myself, Crystal, you're okay. I got to the stage where I couldn't stand looking at my face in the mirror, because all that I felt was shame. All that I felt was disappointment. And I'd almost adopted that identity from the words that my ex-husband was saying to me, calling me useless, calling me pathetic, saying that I can never do anything right. I believed that about myself, and it was just resonating with a lie that I'd already believed since I was a lot younger. And so I got myself into the spiral, this downward spiral of believing that I was worthless, believing that I was a nothing. And I got to that stage where I thought, I don't want to live anymore. Due to my strong beliefs about marriage and commitment, I felt like I was in this marriage for life, and that this is where I needed to stay, and that divorce wasn't an option. However, this made me feel so trapped, and I just kept thinking, surely I don't want to live in this situation anymore. If I can't get divorced, I'd rather die. Or otherwise, my husband would kill me through the abuse. And so I got to that stage where I suddenly shocked myself into reality after thinking constantly every day, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to live. And yet feeling like I was trapped in this marriage, I came to a decision through journaling and realizing on paper what my life actually was. I then decided I've got to do something about this. And so I made a decision to at least try and get out of this myself, emotionally and mentally. Although physically I was not sure what was going to happen, whether I could ever leave, I decided that emotionally I was going to get myself out of this pit that I had found myself in. And that's what led me to start looking in the mirror and telling myself every day, Crystal, you're okay. And even though I didn't feel it on the inside, just by saying it, eventually I could look at myself in the mirror. I would not look away or look down, but I would be able to look at myself, look into my eyes in the mirror and tell myself that I'm okay. And from there, the journey just continued, where then I started building myself up with positive affirmations of things that I knew to be true, changing those beliefs about myself from you're a nothing, you're a nobody, you can't do anything right, you're useless, to actually finding good points about myself. And this was part of the journey, is trying to find good in myself. I could find good in other people, but finding good in myself seemed to be the challenge. And yet daily, just making this a practice of being very conscious of of finding good things in myself as opposed to weaknesses or things where I was failing or the thoughts that brought me so much shame. And then just relying on my relationship with God, which I realized too had been so twisted through religion, through some of the things I'd been taught in churches about, you know, you're bad, you're no good. All of those things started resonating with what I'd actually believed about myself. And yet you see now that that's actually where the battle starts and ends, actually. What I believe about myself, what I believe about God, what I believe about what other people think about me, what I believe about what God thinks about me, is actually very important. But it all starts with what I believe about myself.
Maybe from a chronological point of view, you alluded there to you went into a marriage already feeling below par. They weren't your words, but that was my kind of understanding of what you were saying. You know, take the clock back even further and start to go back into your childhood and, you know, the legacy of why you actually went into that marriage feeling so with issues around self-deservedness and self-worth, self-love, self-respect and all that you alluded to. I mean, am I picking up the right thread there, Crystal? Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely correct. Paul, I think that growing up, I was the second daughter, and I still had two brothers that were younger than me. And I just felt very inferior to my sister mainly. And that all came about because my sister and my mum were very close, and they would often discuss things together. They were both very outspoken, and they would always have the same opinions. In my experience, they would have the same opinions about colors of dresses, clothing, just friends, topics, you know, of conversation. They seem to always be on the same page. Yeah. However, with me, I seem to think differently to them. And with having the two girls, namely my mom and my sister, and then me, I thought, well, I must be wrong and they must be right. So I started doubting my gut. I started doubting that anything I had or my thought processes I felt were incorrect. And I judged my thoughts and my feelings and my opinions. I judged them in relation to my mum and my sisters. And so I thought that I was always wrong and that my opinion was obviously the incorrect one. And so I should change my thinking. And yet I didn't know what was wrong with it, because all I felt and all I thought was all that I had. And so my identity was locked up in feeling like there was something wrong with me. And I think that belief that I developed about myself through these experiences were then reinforced as I grew up, went to school. My beliefs about God seemed to be different to what other people had. My beliefs about relationships and my morals seemed to be very different to girls at school. And so I, especially with regards to relationships with boys and girls, I had quite high standards, but I realized that others didn't have these either. So I started thinking once again and believing there must be something wrong with me. I'm a misfit. I don't belong. And there was just a continual feeling that there is something wrong with me. And so when my ex-husband did come along, he was my only boyfriend. I'd never dated anyone before I met him. And it was basically because I wanted to keep my life pure and I didn't want to get involved in a relationship that was just going to be a fling or something that wouldn't go anywhere. So I think my ideas, I had very idealistic ideas and values, and I thought that they were obviously wrong because nobody else seemed to think that way.
I think this just reinforces, and you know, this conversation so many times, Crystal, and why wouldn't we as coaches? Because the power of beliefs. You know, when we're on that track of a certain train of thought and this deep-rooted belief system, whether that's right or wrong, because what is right and what is wrong, it's very subjective. Yeah. Ultimately, I believe it's what actually serves us and makes us feel happy. And I know that word happy can almost become cliched, but certainly from my own research and my own experiences of life, actually, it is as simple as that. When we look, and this is my personal view on things, around who we are at our true core selves from a newborn, it is around the peace, the love, and the happiness that we have naturally. It's our right. It's our birthright. It's who we are at our core. And then as time goes by, we get another layer of challenge, and then we get another layer of challenge on that. So we stick a plaster on, and that plaster is got a label on it that says you are. You are, to use some of your words, Crystal, you are a misfit, you are inferior, you are no good. You know, you compare yourself with others, which is a recipe for disaster, as we know. So, yes. You know, as we travel and as we grow, we're not actually growing. We're ungrowing, if there's such a term. But that's the natural evolution of what happens to us all, isn't it? Till we get to a stage, I think, of emotional intelligence and awareness to say, well, you know, I'm not happy. This is not right. Whatever my beliefs are, they're not serving me. So maybe I look around me, and that doesn't mean I have to compromise myself to the way or that I perceive other people are, or not as the case maybe, but I have a right to be happy. And this belief system that I currently hold is not making me happy.
Yeah, it's so true.
I always kind of revert then, Crystal, to Gandhi's seven steps that start with beliefs and end in results. And I've yet to find anything more powerful than this, because not from a nice, convenient package and theory point of view, but when I make sense of my own journey, and obviously speaking to a lot of people around the pain they're suffering and the journey that's took them from, you know, from that pain to a place of peace and love and happiness, is it all starts with our beliefs. Everything starts with our beliefs, which then lead into our thoughts. Our thoughts influence our words. Our words influence our actions, which in turn influence our habits, our values, and ultimately our results. So what we believe is what we become. It becomes absolutely a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. That's such truth.
So what was that golden moment, if I'm not being oversimplistic, Crystal, to single out a single moment or moments where you accepted, I wouldn't say realized, because you probably realized on an ongoing basis that your beliefs weren't serving you from what I've heard you say, but was there a kind of golden moment that said, actually, my beliefs are not serving me, you know, the winds of change are blowing, maybe I need to adjust my sails?
Yes, there actually is a moment, is that moment. And that moment was, it came through my brother, actually. He'd stayed with my ex-husband and I for 3 months while he was going through a breakup. And during that time, he could see the discomfort, the walking on eggshells, all of that was happening in the home. But my ex-husband obviously could not be himself, which was to be verbally abusive, physically abusive. he couldn't do that while my brother was there. So he got even more and more frustrated, but my brother sensed all of this. Anyway, my brother moved out, but it was about a month later that my brother said to me, Chrissy, if I, as your brother, don't like the way that you are being treated, how much more doesn't God? And that hit me between my eyes. That was like the moment that made me question everything that I had actually believed, because my belief in God was very strong and my faith was very strong. However, I started questioning everything, questioning my faith, questioning what God am I actually believing in. If my brother has said this, if he would want to take me out of this situation, and if my parents or friends really knew what was happening at home, they would all want to rip me out of that home and take me into a place of safety and love. And yet here I was staying in this situation, believing that God wanted me to be in this situation because God hates divorce. And it made me question my belief. Who do I really believe God is? And because God had been my foundation from the start, I started really seeking the truth. I started seeking the truth about God, God's character. I started seeking the truth about myself. Who am I really? And this started me on this search of identifying what I'm truly believing about myself, about God, about others. And so that was like my turning moment when my brother said that he, you know, if he does not like the way I'm being treated, how much more doesn't God? And so it was that question that started my search on what is it that I'm actually believing.
Okay. Did we share in a previous conversation as well, Crystal, around an illness that you have that's challenged your life significantly as well? Are you happy to talk and share that with the listeners?
Yes, absolutely. That was a really curved ball, if I can put it that way. Another thing, just when I thought, well, my life was, it was on track. I was out of this relationship. I was doing work with the girls in Thailand, being a counselor to them after they'd been rescued from child sex trafficking. So I was really, really happy. And this was while I was in Thailand. However, when I came back to South Africa for a visit in 2011, I noticed that there was a change in my upper body. I couldn't move my right arm. And anyway, this never got better. I had two surgeries which both failed. I had a surgery in 2016 and then another one last year. So in 1 year, I had two surgeries and both of them failed. So in March this year, I went to another specialist and then again had another a second opinion shortly after that, a few months after. And they diagnosed me with FSHD, which is fascio-scapulo-humeral dystrophy. So it's a type of muscular dystrophy, which is a chromosome disorder. So it's genetic, and doctors don't have any hope for this or any cure at this stage. So the condition that I'm living with at the moment is that I can't raise either of my arms because I can't raise either of my arms higher than shoulder level, well, rib cage level. So I need to lie down on my bed or on the floor to put my shirts on in the morning, to put my dresses on. Washing my hair is a challenge. I've got to bend forward while I'm in the shower and hold one of my arms to wash while I scrub the one side of my head and then the other side. I can't lift and reach for mugs or cups on my own, or otherwise I have to support my right arm with my left arm, holding it at its elbow to try and reach for things, brushing my hair, combing my hair, the daily things, even eating. I've got to put my head to my plate because I can't lift my arm high enough without dropping my food on my fork. So all of these, this has become a real challenge over this last year, because it's just been a series of deterioration of my muscles. And so this has been another instance where I've had to remind myself to never give up, to just keep looking for the great gratitude, be grateful that I have strong legs and I keep those strong. I go to the gym 3 times a week just for 20 minutes doing, stomach exercises, core exercises, doing weights for my legs to keep those strong, because I do depend on those to pick up things, because I lean on them with my arms to pick up things off the floor or to bend over, pick up a cup of coffee. The little things. So I've got to every day remind myself to be grateful for these little things, find the joy in the little things, and have hope that if I just keep looking forward and if I keep my mind positive and keep grateful, then every cell in my body will also naturally have to follow suit. Whereas the only other alternative would be to lose hope, give up, and then end up not wanting to get up in the morning, or not wanting to go to work, or not wanting to do anything. And that would obviously be disastrous. So it's either reminding myself to never give up, to keep positive, to keep my joy going, to find joy in the little things, to give to others, give of myself to others. I can still speak, I can still talk, I can still laugh, I can still share and encourage other people. And that is the greatest gift that I can give of myself. And then another point to just remind myself of personally is that at the end of the day, my identity and who I am is not my body. It's within me. That is who I am. And that my body is just the shell and the covering. And that gives me hope, because even though my body may feel weak, it doesn't mean that internally I have to be weak. Internally, if I am strong, it will help my body to be strong.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great way to put it. Tell us, share with us, if you will, Crystal, a little bit around your working in Thailand with the young girls.
Yes. It all starts in a nutshell. I can explain how in Thailand the underlying belief that they have, which comes from a type of Buddhism that they practice, it's called Theravada Buddhism, and the Thai people are such peace loving people. They are such devoted and committed people, and so committed to their religion. But in this type of Buddhism that they practice in Thailand, there's an unwritten law which states that for a young girl to make her best merit for her next life and to come back as something better, the best thing that she can do is to provide financially for her family until the age of 25. And yet for a young boy, all he has to do to make this best merit for his next life is to be a monk for 3 months. So there are so many monks in Thailand because these young boys can go into the monasteries and be devoted monks for a minimum period of 3 months, in which case they will already make their merit. They can get educated in the monasteries for free. But for girls, they get educated free by the government up until sixth grade. So all children can get educated free by the government up until sixth grade. So they're normally about 11, 12 years old. And then after that, it becomes the family's responsibility for their education, to pay for their education. So in the northeast of Thailand, especially where there's a lot of poverty and they mainly do rice farming, this is where a lot of the girls then find themselves in a position where they start to worry, as well as the parents. The parents worry, how will our daughter ever make her merit and come back as something better in her next life if they cannot afford to send her to school, because then she can't get a job and she won't be able to send money home, which would determine her merit making. So this is where the traffickers then have an opening to be able to go into the villages and play on this belief, that where the parents believe that they have to do what they can for their daughter to provide this money. So when the traffickers go into the villages, they dress up in smart suits and they'll say to the parents, we can take your daughters and give her a good education and a job, and we'll take them and be able to provide this for you. But we do know that you are going to lose her on the rice fields, so you're going to have to employ another person to work on the rice fields. We'll give you money in exchange for taking her in it, and so that you won't lose out on her employment, basically, as an employee. So they take her to the villages and then into Black Bangkok or Chiang Mai, and they will then put her into a bar, and that's where she starts with her prostitution work, so to speak, because every bar in Thailand has the opportunity to be able to, for the girls to be sold, so or bought by the tourists and also locals. So this underlying belief is what actually causes these girls to be trafficked and also to volunteer to go and work in the cities, so that they can provide money for their families, send money home. And this way they believe that they are going to be making their best merit and come back as something better in their next life. And it's this belief that actually makes Thailand the world's top sex tourist destination. Because as we know, there's prostitution in every country, but Thailand is known as a sex tourist destination. And it's this belief that they have, that it's like a family responsibility that the girls have toward and feel that they have to do this. They have to send money home and before the age of 25. So they believe that the younger they start, the more merit they can make. But their dream is still to find a foreign man who can marry them, and then he can be the supplier of the money to send home, rather than them having to prostitute themselves. So it's once again goes back down to beliefs. What they believe has actually led them into this lifestyle of which doesn't actually work for them.
That must have been really challenging for you, Crystal, though, bearing in mind your moral code, the way your formative beliefs were, and all the things that you stood for in the early part of your life, to then go into that extremely contrasting culture, belief system, call it what you will. That must have played havoc with you.
Paul, the amazing thing was that I think after the experience that I'd had in my marriage, where I felt like I was a nothing, I felt almost like a prostitute to my ex-husbands from time to time. And I think I was so broken within myself, but it humbled me. That whole experience of going through that marriage, that abusive marriage, really humbled me to realize how I had actually elevated myself within my attitudes, with my towards people, how judgmental I had been. And yet these girls, their actions did not make them who they truly are. The fact that they were prostituting themselves was all done out of a belief and a brokenness that they didn't even know was wrong, in quote unquote. I had such empathy, such compassion, because I knew that after speaking with them and speaking, conversing with them and hearing their stories, that inside they were just as broken as I was, and in my marriage, and that you know, they at the end of the day were just seeking for love in exactly the same way as I was. They were just looking for acceptance, approval, love, and a good future. And yet, this was the only way that they knew how to get it. And they would say to me, "It does not matter how they suffer in this life. What matters is their next life." And so they were basically sacrificing their bodies and sacrificing their happiness in this life so that they could come back as something better in their next life. And so, yeah, this just conversing with them, getting to know them was just such a privilege, and to realize that they are just like me. We all are the same. Inherently, we all just want love. And acceptance and happiness, and they were doing what they thought was best based on their beliefs.
And I actually agree with what you've just said there, Crystal, because when we look at the insecurities or the inherent beliefs that we have, or the fears is probably a better way to contextualize it, for every single one of us is, and I say this consistently, around two things. One, we will never be loved. So we will, to quote Meatloaf, we will do anything for love. And the other one is we will never be good enough. And, you know, to have those fears within us, and we all have them to varying degrees, it doesn't take much then to kind of exacerbate that and blow it wide open from people that, just let's say, I've got ulterior motives. So what I'm picking up here, Crystal, and please correct me, I'm sure you will if I'm wrong, that your training, if that's the right word, of your experiences with your ex-husband were exactly that. They prepared you for the work that then you was to do latterly with the girls in Thailand. Would that be a fair assessment, or am I wide of the mark with that?
Oh, absolutely correct, Paul. Yeah, that's definitely it. And I think a lot of my life message, if I can, sort of give myself a life message, is to say that nothing in life is ever wasted. That every experience that we have, that there is a purpose to it. It may not be good at the time, and we may have made wrong choices. Like I did, I made wrong choice in the husband, but. And I have made many other wrong choices, but through that all, nothing is wasted. Those experiences, I think, if we have a right mindset and don't give up, and we keep trying to focus on the positive and focus forward, no experience in our life, no matter how bad it was, will ever be wasted. It will always lead to something that can benefit us or others in the future.
You've used two words there, Crystal, consistently. One was purpose, the other was experience. I believe that purpose for us, okay, so let me park the experience, let me come at this from a different, what would you say is your life's purpose then from where you are now? Because obviously you can only comment in the moment where you are now. That may change tomorrow, the day after, may have changed from yesterday, the week before. So if I was to try and put you on the spot and say, Crystal, what is your life's purpose? What would you say?
I would say that it is helping other people, helping others to discover the God-given potential within themselves and to live their life to the fullest.
Excellent. And that inspiration, would that, and I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, would that need to come from somebody that actually is living that life rather than, dare I say, and I'm not suggesting for one second that this is your story, as I say, please allow me to play devil's advocate, that's actually coming from somebody that believes in their purpose, they've been there, they've done it, they know what they're talking about, rather than living in this kind of idealistic philosophy of this is how life should be, but it's not really like that, but I'll grin and bear it, stiff upper lip and all that kind of stuff. So, but to come from that real place of, you know, I might have a few battle scars, but I'm here because I never gave up and I'm here to inspire. So if I can do it, so can you. Would that be a fair comment?
Definitely. That is spot on. Definitely.
So around life's purpose, is it fair to say, and I'm just going to park the experience angle just a touch longer, Crystal, if I may, is it fair to say that having found or being very aware of your purpose, you then need elements of prosperity, whatever prosperity means to you? So, okay, let me ask you, Chris, what does prosperity mean to you?
To me, prosperity means knowing or having that sense of fulfillment and purpose, and living that every day. That is true prosperity, because that will then manifest in that inner sense that you have of being fulfilled daily, living life on purpose. Will then lead to your own success, or like my own success, which would mean that I am prosperous in every area of my life. So prosperity is being being complete and whole, having the ultimate, being the best that you can be physically, emotionally, mentally, financially, in every area of life, to truly be the best that you can be. That to me is true prosperity, in every area of your life live it to its best, or have the best.
Absolutely. And you are living proof of that, because you've already alluded to, Crystal, have you not, around, you know, the limitations of your upper limbs, your arms, but, you know, I picked up on the passion you spoke about, going to the gym for 20 minutes every day and, you know, working on your legs and your core, your stomach and all that kind of thing. It's like, okay, so I might not be 100% there, but that ain't going to stop me. In fact, it's going to inspire me and fuel me to do even more with the things I can do.
Absolutely. No, that's so true.
Okay. Let me ask you a final question around what's your interpretational perception of philanthropy?
Sure. Can you expand on that a little bit more? Like what? I haven't actually even thought of that.
Okay. Yeah, sure. My pleasure. Greek words for it are love of humanity. I mean, I think the natural reaction when I ask that question, Crystal, is for people to say, oh, I'm a multimillionaire and I set up schools in Africa or save the elephants, or, you know, these monumental contributing projects, which obviously are fantastic. But the reality is, for me, it doesn't have to be that grand. It is summed up in that Greek interpretation of love of humanity. It's giving back. And you've already alluded to it in your story. And the reason I've kind of took things down this particular avenue is I'm constantly testing my three pillars model that has stood the test of time, both with myself and with people I've worked with. But I love to ask the question, because it's about creating a model, I think, or when we come across people and have conversations, Crystal, is it not fair to say that, as a generalization, people want a quick fix? They want to, you know, just give me a solution, that instant gratification. Give me a formula. You know, let me take a pill and everything will be great. Well, as we know, life doesn't quite work that way. In fact, it doesn't work that way, full stop. But what I've tried to do, my rationale for my three pillars of life, which is around purpose, prosperity, and philanthropy, is actually saying to people, if you're aware of those three elements and you can work towards them in your life, certainly purpose is massive. And, you know, having the pleasure of not just existing with a purpose, having prosperity in your life, so you feel good about yourself, and you've already alluded to that on more than one occasion. And then Okay, so I've got a purpose. I know where I'm going. I feel good about myself. I'm prosperous, whether that's emotionally, spiritually, financially, physical, whatever it is. It's usually a, you know, some kind of mixture of all that. And then because I've done all that, I actually feel I've got the authenticity and the power to give back to those less fortunate. And so it becomes like a continuous improvement loop that goes round and round and round and just gets bigger and bigger. So that's why I come in at that angle, Crystal, yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think my answer to your question would be that through all of this, actually, through my story and which has brought me to right now, the interesting thing for me has been that my giving back to the world, or my feeling of contributing back has been really minimized to no longer thinking that I've got to do something great or something big, but it's more like the reality of being able to love the person that I'm with, the person that is with me in my space right now, loving them well, and being like just loving every person that I come into contact with, loving them well, then that's more than enough energy that I can deal with at one time if I'm doing it properly. And I think with my whole experience of even why I needed to come back, you know, to South Africa and how that all worked out, which was obviously only in December. And then having to deal with sort of, well, what am I doing now? How am I going to give back now? What am I, you know, what am I doing? That was, it was almost like my identity had been, I'd taken so much love and joy and energy doing what I was doing, that I think in my mindset, I had also imagined that I need to keep making a difference by doing something major where, you know, I could see that a difference had been made. And so this year, I think one of the big things that big lessons that I've learned is that that's what my difference or contribution to the world is. All that I can actually do and do well is to love the people in my life, love them well. And that's as simple as it is. And focusing on that sounds so simple, but it's been a challenge for me because I've focused on it and thought every day, am I loving this person well? What would be the most loving thing to do for myself and for them? And I think learning to love myself has been one of the things that I've realized too, is one of the best contributions I can give to this world, because if I love myself well, then I've got enough love and resources within myself to be able to give that to other people. But I think very often we don't love ourselves enough, and I know I most certainly hadn't. So I was running on an empty tank very often because I was trying to give out to others, especially in the line of work I was in. I was trying to give love and warmth and care and advice to the girls because they really needed it. But I was running on an empty tank because I hadn't realized that I truly wasn't loving myself.
Absolutely, because you know, you cannot give what you don't have. And I massively resonate with that story, Chris, massively resonate with that, because for many years, and it was about my healing, was exactly doing that. You know, it gave me significance, it gave me connection, it gave me certainty, it gave me uncertainty, growth. You know, it gave me so much to be able to give to others. The reality was, whether it was time or money or particularly emotion, the reality, well, I didn't have it to give. But that process of going through that, actually, there was great healing in that. And to the point where my giving now comes from a totally different place, totally different. It's I totally resonate with that. Okay, so just flipping over to the experience element, so say, Crystal, you used two words very consistently, and the second one was experience. And I'd like to share at this point with the listeners Rupert Spira's non-duality approach, where he talks about the mind, the body, and the world, and all. And we don't dismiss these things lightly, but all they are ultimately is experiences. They come and they go.
Mm.
Our mind, however, tends to hold on to them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, that's the challenge, isn't it? Because the mind is a mechanism, isn't it, for protecting us first and foremost. And if we've had an adverse challenge or experience in the past, what we do is tend to store that somewhere. Right, okay. So if I come across, I don't know, let me just make something up on my feet here. If I come across a guy that wears a blue hat, red shoes, and he's got a pink handkerchief, and he does me a really bad turn, and I see somebody again that fits that description, I'm going to have to be very careful because he will do me a bad turn, even though it's a totally different person and it might be years later or whatever the change of circumstances are. But my mind is saying, no, beware, pink handkerchief or whatever. Now, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. But that's what our mind does, isn't it? So I've got I've got an approach now, Crystal, where my mind is my best friend. But I understand these experiences. And how Spira describes it, and I think this is, that for me personally, this has been massive. When we look at these things that come and go in our lives, that's exactly what they do. They come and they go. Happy experiences, sad experiences, challenging experiences, good, bad, indifferent, stick whatever label you want. But when it comes down to it, they're experiences. The one thing that remains constant throughout these things as they come and as they go, is us, at our core self, us, and that peace, and that love, and that happiness. That's who we are at our true core. And he likens it, and I think this is a fantastic model, as a TV screen or a TV monitor. And as we go through life, if we imagine ourselves as a TV screen or monitor, we host that particular scene at that particular moment in time. So we might be playing a happy scene. Tomorrow might be a sad scene, but it's a scene, it's a script. It's like turning a page on a book. And what you've said to me, Crystal, you've turned many pages. In fact, I think you're writing new books now, if we can use that metaphor.
Yes.
But the point is, the one thing that remains throughout that simply is an experience, whether it's of the mind, whether it's of the body, or whether it's of the world, it is an experience and nothing more than a scene that's played out on our screen. And that screen, at its true self, at our true core self, is peace, is love, is happiness. And I think for me personally, that's been a great breakthrough to detach from this confusion and this stuff that's out there. And yeah, but you don't understand how tough my life's been. I mean, I was in victim mode for that, justifying that for many years. And that became a self-fulfilling prophecy in itself until I realized that, just get over it. It's, you know, there's people far worse off, as there always will be. There's people far better off, as there always will be. But that's not the issue. It's around that acceptance, isn't it, of who you are at your true core self, and then putting that in the context, I believe, of the three pillars of, what's my purpose? Why am I here?
Yeah, so it's brilliant.
So, okay, so have you got anything that you'd like to add at this point, Crystal?
No, just to reemphasize, don't ever, ever give up.
Okay, I mean, it's, you know, it's brilliant in its simplicity, and something, you know, the best things in life are simple. It doesn't need any further elaboration than that, does it really?
No, that's so true.
Okay, right, Crystal, listen, it's been great to talk to you, and I thank you for sharing some of your life experiences, obviously for the benefit of the listeners. So thank you very much indeed for that.
Thank you, Paul.
And also to you, the listeners, for being part of this episode. Until the next time, keep learning and loving, and remember, mastering life starts by embracing our hearts.
Thanks for listening to the Mastering the Game of Life podcast. Drop a line to paul@paullowhearts.com with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Alternatively, check out Paul's website at paullowhearts.com or any of his social media feeds under the same name. Remember, mastering life starts by embracing our hearts.